Welcome to the Journey of a Christian Dad podcast. I'm your host, Dan Lewigs. Who is the spiritual leader of your family? Is it you, your pastor, your spouse, the media? Do you know? I did. And sadly, no one was taking responsibility to lead our family. Well, friends, someone needs to take that job, and that man is you. You may not feel qualified, and some days I don't. With the help of God and a community of dads helping each other on their journey, you can be the leader your family deserves. We welcome you to the Journey of the Christian Dad podcast. Hey guys, welcome to the Journey of a Christian Dad podcast. Glad you're here. Hey, we're going to do something a little bit different today. And just roll with it. Normally we pray before the podcast, but today Patrick Morley is with us. We'll get more into that in a minute, but Patrick's going to open us in prayer today. So welcome, guys. Glad we're recording the prayer this time. I didn't last time.
Our dearest Father, first of all, good morning. Good day to you. We love you. We praise you. We worship you. And by assuming a posture of humility, I want to give you the honor and glory that you alone are worthy to receive. Thank you for Dan, for this beautiful ministry that you've given him, and pray for the men who are listening, that they would walk away from this feeling like this has been a very valuable investment of their time. And we ask these things in your name and for your glory and no other reason, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Yep.
Oh, thanks for kicking us off. Appreciate that. Not to put any pressure on you, but you've been in pretty big spots with lots of pressure, speaking in front of large groups and everything before. So thank you.
It's an honor. It's an honor to be with you too.
And absolutely,
I love what you're trying to do.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
So just quick little intro. Rather than just read something, I'll throw a few things in and then you can interject if you like. Some guys may not have heard of you. I understand. How many books has Man in the Mirror sold?
Man in the Mirror, over 4 million.
Over 4 million. So just a few, so I've been involved in a book study, with Man in the Mirror a couple of different times. So I've done it twice now, read it probably, I don't know, 15 times, 20 times. So, it's a book that I go back and reference quite often. Yeah. Yeah. So guys, that book's a really, really good book. And this new book that Patrick's written is called Broken Boy, From Broken Boy to Mended Man. Really, really, really cool title. So Patrick, from the books I've read in the past, real successful guy, business-wise, starting off, did what a lot of us do, try to conquer the world, and then maybe had his idols in the wrong places, like some of us guys do. And then the world sort of crumbled around him a little bit and shook him a little bit. And then he realized there's a much, much better way. And he's radically changed his life. However, the examples he uses in his book are things that all of us guys can relate to. Is that a fairly okay-ish summary, Patrick?
I love it. It's perfect. It's great. Yeah.
So without jumping into all the details, and we can go where it goes, but guys, Patrick's somebody that you can absolutely relate to. He's not 30 years old anymore, so you might think, you know, what am I going to learn from Grandpa? Guys, if you've got that mindset, you've heard me talk about it before, we can learn from the people that came before us. Some people I talk to say you stand on the shoulders of giants by being around them, by reading their books, by studying, by practicing, by teaching. So thankful to have you with us. And this book, holy cow, like you, in my opinion, have vulnerably shared some things in the past in your other books. However, haven't got into, you know, tons of details and stuff. However, in this book, my first question was, how in the heck are you going to be vulnerable and also honor your parents without, you know,
throwing them under the bus?
Yeah. So, like, in the book, you talk about that, which I'm like, oh, it's so good. You just jumped right in. But what are your thoughts on that now as the book's been published? Or, by the way, it comes out like right away. It's not quite out yet. So thank you for the advanced copy.
Yes. Yeah. March 19 is the pub date. Well, it's interesting because I did not know how much my childhood wounds were affecting me. In the book, I call this emotional amnesia. Some of the guys listening right now might relate, but as a young man, I was extremely angry. I was basically walking around ready to erupt at the slightest provocation. Now, I never did that at work, because at work, your reputation is on the line, and who knows, maybe even your employment itself. So I was always pretty cool there, but then I'd just bottle it up, bring it home, and then something would happen, and my wife or one of my children would do something that irritated me, and then I would respond way out of proportion to what was going on. So there was that, and then I would feel bad about it, and then I get moody and pout and have a pity party, and and so I was having these dramatic mood swings and didn't know why, and didn't know why. And then I had other things going on too. I mean, just between like you and I right now, I love talking to you and feel good about that. And I am healed of all these things. But one of the principal characteristics of broken boys, and I put nine characteristics of broken boys in the book. The first one is that you have a hard time believing that people really care about you. So you walk into a room and you're just suspicious. You don't really. And Erik Erikson's very for the great psychologist who developed a one of the premier child development theories. He says that the first task of a child is trust versus mistrust. And so when a little boy is not the gleam in his mother's eye, is not the pride of his daddy, then he makes a decision that the world's not a safe place. And so these things can follow you all through your life. So if you're listening, you might think, well, I'm not sure what we're talking about here yet. But what I'm going to tell you is that when I was 53 years of age, 53 years of age, my mother died, and I didn't feel anything. I wasn't sad, didn't miss her, I didn't cry, and I thought that was pretty strange. So I made an appointment with a counselor who, over 8 sessions, really helped me put into words the father and mother wounds that I'd never been able to articulate. Okay, now let's go from 53 years of age all the way back. So I quit high school in the middle of my senior year. My next brother followed in my footsteps. He eventually died of a heroin overdose, and my two youngest brothers have had way more than their fair share of problems over the years. And my dad never saw that coming. Now, go back even further than that. My dad was abandoned by his dad when my dad was 2 years of age, the youngest of four kids. So my father, I think I'm pretty sure he wanted to do the right thing. I know he did, but he had never felt the scratch of his father's whiskers. He had never heard his father's soothing voice reading him a bedtime story. He'd never tossed a ball in the backyard, never wrestled with his dad on the living room floor, never had his hair tussled, and so on. And so what normal male behavior looked like was unexampled to him. And so I think my dad, I know my dad wanted to break the cycle. They didn't talk like that back then. I know he wanted to break the cycle, but it didn't work out for him because he never had any guys like you, Dan, take him under his wing, their wing, and teach him, show him, disciple him, mentor him, how to be a godly man, husband, and father. So I left it, and I joined the army. Dad wasn't going to let me hang around the house when I quit high school. Funny side story, well, not funny, but a side, interesting side story. My dad was planning had a had an appointment to get his glasses, the prescription in his glasses changed because he was having these headaches. But then after he dropped me off at the enlistment office, his headaches went away and he didn't need to get glasses anymore. Yeah, interesting. So I was pretty out of control kid. So if you're listening and if you were able to say that my dad and my mom, my parents were encouraging, or my parents were affirming, then you probably grew up under positive parenting. But what if you can't say that? What if you say one or more of seven different things? And these are seven different things in the book where I spent about a page or page and a half on each of these just to help men understand what we're talking about here. What if you say my parents were passive? My parents were absent, maybe by divorce, death, mental illness, addiction, whatever. Number three, my parents were permissive. I got away with almost anything but murder. Or my parents were enabling. They did not require me to do the things that I could and should do for myself, or hold me accountable when I did something that I shouldn't do. My parents were angry. I had to always walk around on eggshells, and I never knew what was going to set them off. My parents were demanding. I have a guy working on a just put a fence in, and I gave him a copy, an advanced copy of this book, and he said, yeah, that this is what my parents were. They were demanding. It felt like my growing up experience was like living in Auschwitz. So he just strict, very demanding, no affirmation. And then the final one would be my parents were belittling. They're actively making jokes at your expense. One of my best friends for 17 years, a guy named Jim, when he was a little boy, he had his friend Timmy over. And one day, Jim's dad, my friend's dad, was at the door when Timmy needed to go home for dinner. And he opened the door for Timmy. And with his son standing right there, he said to Timmy, he said, Timmy, you can come back anytime. I sure wish I had a son like you. He never got over it. I mean, he literally never, ever got over that. I think he eventually, he and I worked through that. I think he forgave his father, but the damage was done, and of course it was the tip of the iceberg too, but belittling remarks. So guys, if you would say one of those seven things about your parents, and then on top of that, you find yourself lashing out or withdrawing or blowing up relationships or sabotaging your career, and you don't really understand what's going on, there's a good chance that you may have some unresolved childhood wounds. And that's what this book is about. And this book is really not about me. I do tell my story to be the frame so that guys would be able to follow along the whole arc of the book, but it's really about you and what's going on in your life and what God wants to do in your life. So that's where I'm coming from in this book.
That was fantastic. So, as I was kind of journeying through the book, because it really is kind of a journey, and things I thought about were, how you're going to speak about your parents, your childhood, speak about your kids, speak about your wife, speak about your own role, or the questions you're going to ask. So, this book has got questions during the chapters and after the chapters, which allow you to reflect and think. And as I'm listening to the stories and questions, I kept thinking to myself in multifaceted approaches. And what I mean by that is, okay, how did I grow up? How did my parents treat me in these different ways? Thankfully, I guess I'm on the 20% on the positive parenting side of things. My dad once asked me, he says, sure, I let you down in a lot of different ways. And, I messed up quite a bit. And, he had his ways about him that he learned from his father and learned what not to do from his father. But I said, Dad, man, there was that one time where you didn't build me that Johnny Bench batter up so I could be in the major leagues. Like, that was the thing. Like, I go, and Dad, if that's the worst thing that you did, man, you did okay, man. You
That's
cleared the bar.
beautiful.
You cleared the bar. There were other things as well, but of like looking back to my childhood, that was the thing. But I thought through, the interactions, my parents had with me and how they grew up and just how the generational side of things works and where God was working throughout those relationships. And then I took that and thought, well, how do I use these questions, these thoughts in my marriage? So am I a passive husband? And if so, where, or if not, how am I doing there? Where could I grow in that area? Am I an absent husband? Maybe physically in the home, maybe around, but focus so much on the kids and not paying attention to my wife. Am I a permissive husband? And I just gave a speech the other day at the Iron Sharpens Iron conference, which was happy wife, happy life. And the big lie drives me crazy when I hear the happy wife, happy life, go do that, go do that. You'll have a great marriage, you'll have a great family, like everything will be great. And I'm like, I looked in the Bible and I never found anything that related to that. And then aside from that, there's the yes, dear, whatever you want. Yes, honey, whatever you want. Like, sounds like permissive husband. Am I an angry husband? You mentioned not being angry at work, but a lot of guys can be good with their kids, but angry at their wife. Just the other day, I thought of an example, and I'm like, why did I instantly go to, dang it, my wife, as opposed to look back at me and what did I do to contribute to the situation? So, cast the first stone kind of thing. Am I a demanding husband, an enabling husband, a belittling husband? Not so much me, but I see that around in the world. And I think to myself, hey, man, let's go to lunch. Let's go have a coffee. I'd love to talk to you and see what you're thinking. Can't open the conversation that way, but you want to invite them in and spend some time with them. And then at the same time, how are you taking these same questions and applying them with your kids? Like, how are you doing in these areas as a parent? And then in the friend relationships and male relationships that you have, how are you relating to others? And how are you taking information like this and bringing this into real life? And in my way, not my way, I think God's way, using examples like this is all of our missions. So if there's one thing in our lives that we want to do, I want to do, I want to get to heaven, love Jesus, have him bring me to heaven. And with that, I want everybody else to go there as well. So I think things like this in this book, and by sharing it with others and loving others intentionally, this is a way that we can help others get to heaven and impact generations. So those were my thoughts as I was reading the book, Patrick.
That's good. That's beautiful. Yeah. So the arc of the book is it's broken into three parts. Part one is unraveling what happened to you or understanding what happened to you. I'm a person who usually write. I want to write about solutions and the positive pieces, right?
So, guys, that's another thing about this book.
What's
Patrick is
that?
a solutions guy. He's a solutions guy. So, like, if you ever think like a guy and you want to solve things and fix things, and then he, I think, goes backwards and adds a little color to it. And
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If you're trying to solve the wrong problem, you can only succeed by accident. So we do need to take the time to understand what happened to you as a child, what your parents were like. We talked about that. Parenting is this sacred privilege and responsibility of putting together the right cocktail of love, structure, roots, and wings. And when parents do that, then their children will say, "My parents were affirming or encouraging." When parents get part of that wrong or one or more parts of that wrong, that's when we have these other seven situations. The problem, of course, is that then results in impacts on the child. And Alcoholics Anonymous, they have their list of characteristics. Al-Anon, Adult Children of Alcoholics, they have their list of characteristics. So I felt like those of us who are in the fraternal order, Broken Boys, we needed to have our list, our own list. So over a period of years, I developed these nine characteristics of Broken Boys and put them in the book. I've mentioned a couple, dramatic mood swings, I don't know why. Nine of them altogether. And so really by the end of the first section of the book, I do believe men are going to have new knowledge about what happened to them. And it's going to be eye-opening, as it was to me. I spent, sidebar, I did spend 6 years trying to decide whether or not I should even write this book because, I didn't want to throw my parents under the bus. And I had to sort of noodle out in my brain, how I could write this book in a way that what I wanted to do is I wanted to write the book in a way that all three of us could sit down in a room and go over the manuscript and say, yes, that's what really happened. And yes, we think that that could be something that might be able to help somebody else. So my parents were nice people. They really were. They were extremely passive and very permissive. when I was dating my wife, she said, "You know, your parents gave you too much say," and they really did. And then just, I never heard the words growing up, Dan. I never heard the words, "I love you. I'm proud of you. We believe in you. Here's some things you might want to know about the opposite sex. Here's some things you might want to consider about future education. Here are the kinds of jobs you might be, interested in." None of that. None of that. We weren't a physically affectionate family either. I have no recollection of ever being hugged. Now, I'm not naive. I'm not here to say none of those things ever happened. But even if they did, it's still very significant at my age that I still have no recollection of those things. I'll give you an example. So when I was writing the book, I remembered something. I raced motocross in college, and my parents apparently didn't come to events, but they did come to one motocross race. Well, that happened to be the race that I had a bad crash and got flown to the hospital in a helicopter,
Oh, man.
right? So I'm 75 years of age, and it was not until last year when I was writing the book that you would think that, okay, so my parents, they didn't come to the emergency room,
Whoa.
and they didn't call to see how I was doing. Well, you would think that that would be such a horrible experience that it would have just completely devastated my life, right? Well, here's the thing. I didn't even remember it until last year.
Oh my gosh.
So the power of denial is off the charts. I call it emotional amnesia. So we all compartmentalize bad experiences and so forth, and sometimes they eat away at us, and sometimes we can, move on. But emotional amnesia is something, denial is something different. It's actually emotional amnesia. You literally can't remember it. And so a number of men that I've been dealing with, and with the advanced copies of the book, I offered the book to pastors, an advanced reading copy of the book, to pastors, mental health professionals, and men's ministry leaders. And so some of the feedback has been phenomenal, but denial has been one of the huge areas where guys say, "I think I've just been in denial my whole life about what happened to me as a child. I'm going to help you walk through that and understand what happened to you if you decide to take a look
And
at
you
this."
did that yourself. The counselor was working with you at 53, and you're like, no, great parents. Or
Oh.
some version of the counselor's digging at you a little bit, and you're, nah.
Yeah, I mean, I made a total defense. I mean, talk about being a good attorney. I would have been a good attorney. I put up a great defense for my parents. But she kept pressing in, leaning in, and eventually I did face the truth and I did get out of denial. And the thing that comes after now, and then now the second part of the book is the process of healing your childhood wounds. So there's a process, a biblical process for healing childhood wounds that has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years. Improvements, refinements are made, by different psychologists and psychiatrists and counselors and so forth. But there's also some sense we all know that there's nothing new under the sun. So the basic core elements of this process remain unchanged. And the first one is to get out of denial and to face the truth. And but then after that comes a grieving what could and should have been. And so there will be a couple of places if you. So I need to say at this point too, as a sidebar, most of my books, when I do a podcast or an interview like this, Dan, I know that very few people are actually going to go out and buy the book. So what I try to do is I try to give them enough of the book in the podcast that at least they have the main ideas. This is not that book. What we're talking about here, the subtitle, A Positive Plan to Break the Cycle, a positive plan to heal your childhood wounds and break the cycle. So that's not something that can just be intellectually attained and then everything's going to be okay. You
And my thought,
actually have to
guys, is
go through
get
the process.
two copies of the book. Get yourself an Audible copy.
Yeah.
Listen to it through and get yourself the paperback copy so that you can write in it,
Yeah.
go back to it, journal off to the side, whatever your process is, but I like the audible side to listening, and also and you read this one yourself personally.
No, I do not.
No,
No.
you don't. Okay. It's to me, I heard your voice as I was listening to it. I'm like, I was just tracking right there along with you where but anyway, you'll think it's Patrick reading it because it just sounds so authentic. The guy who reads it is great. But so no, I highly encourage you to get two copies of this book.
That's good. So yeah, so first is, first part is just understanding what happened to you, and the second part is going through this healing process, and I'll walk you through it step by step. And then the third part of the book is breaking the cycle in your marriage, with your children, with your friends and other men. So it really is focused on healing and the future, but you do have to take the time to understand what's going on. So when I turned 24, I became a follower of Jesus. As I mentioned, I left, I quit high school. So I was basically, the best word to describe my relationship with my parents after that was estranged. And frankly, if not for my wife, I probably wouldn't have had any contact at all. I was very angry about the whole thing. Didn't know why. I was just a kid. How would I know? Besides, it was very confusing because my parents were actually very nice people. But whether intentional or unintentional, the effect was the same. Our family was very dysfunctional. So I think what happened was out of ignorance, not malice, but we were dysfunctional. So when I became a follower of Jesus at 24, one of my brothers had been off, the one who had also quit high school. He'd also joined the military, and he'd been off fighting in a war. And our family had not been together in a few years. So when I was 25 years of age, my parents had us all out for Thanksgiving dinner. And when we grew up, I grew up in a Christian home that didn't know Christ, if that makes any sense.
That makes a lot of sense to a lot of
Yeah.
guys.
So, but we went through the motions. And so we said grace before meals. So, but our method was to say the fewest words possible as rapidly as possible. So our prayer for grace was, God is good, God is great, and we thank you for this food. Amen. But at this particular Thanksgiving dinner, so my mom and dad and my wife and myself and my three younger brothers, we were all sitting at the table, and my dad said, I'd like to pray today. And so he started out very slow. He said, Lord, Mom, and I would just like to say thank you. And then he started blubbering and he excused himself and he went into the bedroom. I followed him in there. I said, Dad, are you all right? What's wrong? He said, yeah, I'm okay. He said, it's just that your mother and I never thought that we would ever see our four boys together again. And so something softened in me that day. And because I had, because Christ had given me, I just made the decision to unilaterally forgive them. I think that Jesus teaches unilateral forgiveness. I talk about it in the book and explain why. I prove it through scripture. And but I didn't have this paradigm of healing childhood wounds and breaking the cycle. I was just going on intuition. So, that was 25, and I resolved things finally when I was 53. So that's 28 years, right? 28 years. So, guys, what I'm telling you, I think you can do in 2.8 months what took me 28 years to do if you have the right tools to do that. Abraham Maslow said, if the only tool that you have is a hammer, you tend to think of every problem as a nail.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, you have to have the right tools. This is a tool to help you. It's a positive plan. It's a plan to help you heal your childhood wounds and break the cycle. And with these three different distinct parts in it, I really think that, yeah, I just noticed it today, this morning, it's the number one new men's, n number one new release in Christian men's issues. So it's on pre-order. So a lot of guys are already connecting with the dots that this is something that might be useful to them. And so I really want to encourage your listeners to get a copy of the book. Women, if you're listening, what I want to say to you is, yes, get the book, or you can read it for yourself. But beyond that, if you want to understand your husband better, if your husband is volatile and you don't know what to expect, and he's insecure and needs constant reassurance, or if he's maybe like especially immature for his age, or maybe he's like over-responsible, he's very demanding, there's a very good chance that he has unresolved childhood wounds. So read it, you'll understand. I mean, you want him to read it too, but here's my advice, unsolicited advice to you women. Encourage him to read the book, but please don't give the book at him. Don't give it at him. You say, "Hey, honey, I heard about this book I read. I think you might find it useful." Just leave it at that, and then pray, because men, we're proud, and we don't like people telling us what to do, and we
Absolutely.
especially don't like our wives telling us what to do.
And women, guys, back and forth. As I was reading this book also, I thought, so many of these things that came up are also women's issues as well. So, women also have they weren't parented well. They weren't in a positive parented household and so on and so forth. But some of these things are unique to men, but quite a few are, just people in general. So women, read this one, the same way that I did, apply these principles all around and look at yourself as well and see where you can heal also. Something you mentioned, love, believe, and proud. And a friend of mine, Blake Brewer, he's got a legacy letter writing challenge course where he teaches dads and moms how to write a letter to your kids. And his three core things that he puts in it are love, believe, and proud, just like in the Bible, just like Jesus's father spoke about him when he got baptized. I'm like, what a cool principle. And he talks about apologizing to your kids and owning up to the things that, you missed the mark on.
Yeah,
You did the best you could at the
I put the
time.
actual full letter, unedited letter that I sent to our children. I was teaching one time on anger, and in Ecclesiastes, it talks about us having an angry spirit, and the concept of a spirit of anger, having a angry spirit, really clicked with me, and I realized that I had an angry spirit. That was my baseline. And I didn't know why at the time, but once that I got on that one. And by the way, all these things that I did discovered atomistically, I've now systematized. I've got a PhD. I'm a systems theory guy. I have taxonomies for everything. You know this, Dan. I'm very
Yes,
intentional. So I've put this all together into a cohesive process. All these things that I learned a little thing over here and a little thing over there, but I've been able to now to pull it all together. And my counselor was a big help in that too, of course. So I would just. Really, yeah, enough said.
you share a funny story in the book where your mom is talking to you in front of your kids, or at least some of your kids, and says something along the lines of, kind of missed the mark on telling you I loved you, when you were younger
Oh
and,
no, I yeah, it's a great story. So yeah. No, our my mom and dad, we live in the same city. They never invited our children to do a sleepover or anything like that. They just uninvolved, I don't know why, but anyway, they weren't. And they didn't come to our children's events. But we did finally get them to come to one of our son's basketball games. He was point guard in high school, and so in the 11th grade, he was point guard. And he's playing, and my mom and dad came, and so I was sitting on the aisle. My mom was next to me, my dad was next to her, and then my wife was on the far end. So we were the bread and they were the meat and the sandwich. And so I was sitting next to my mom and I said, "We're just so proud of John. We tell him every day we love him and we're proud of him. And he's so industrious and we're so proud of him, all the diligence and leadership skills and different things that he's learning, the perseverance and determination of being in sports, blah, blah, blah. And we just tell him every day that we're how proud we are of him." And then my mom, she's like sitting right next to me, right there. And she says, to no one in particular, she says, She's looking out into the air, you know. She's looking up out into thin air, and she says, "You know, when our four boys were growing up, I don't think we told them often enough that we were proud of them." I wanted to scream, "Mom, I'm right here. I'm one of those four boys. Why are you talking in the third person? I'm right here." And then another voice said, it was screaming also, "Mom, it's not too late. You can tell me now. You can tell me now." But of course, I didn't say anything at all. I just sat there. This was all going on in my head. And so we had already crossed the threshold of love when I was.
So funny story. Before we go into that,
Yeah.
Blake was talking with Terry Bradshaw, Blake Brewer, Legacy Letter Challenge. Him and Terry have gotten to know each other over the years. His dad was really good friends with Terry. And Terry says, "You know, my dad never told me he loved me all my life." And then after his, pro Hall of Fame football career, he buys a ranch and his dad's a rancher. So they start connecting at the ranch. And Terry says to his dad, and Terry's outspoken, says what he thinks. And he says, "Dad, you never told me, you love me all throughout, everything." And he says, "I know you love me. I know you do, but you've never told me." And he goes, "Yeah, you're right.
And that was it.
Dad, I'm right here. Will you tell me you love me?" And he says,
Wow.
"You know I do, son." He says, "But I'm here, Dad, right now. I'm like dying. Will you tell me you love me?" So even after all the years of,
Yeah.
at 52, 50, 53, I don't know if it was, I think it was Dr. James Dobson. You mentioned him earlier when we were talking, and he wins his Lifetime Achievement Award. And they said, "What do you got to say in front of this huge crowd?" And he says, "I wish my dad was here, because if he was here, I bet he'd be proud." It's like, after a lifetime of achievement, of doing amazing things, you're still seeking your dad's approval. And is my dad proud? So maybe he heard it a million times, maybe he didn't. But so hearing you say it, and then as men, we don't ask our parents if we were missing something. Hey, we just tell, like, she's right there next to you, and you said, "I didn't ask her."
So there may be some men listening today, and women too. You mentioned women, and I want to give women permission to read the book. I'm a men's author, right? So I write books for men, and I want to stay in my lane. But I did have a woman, a female counselor, write yesterday. She wanted to know if this book, she could read the book for herself, and I said absolutely. Yeah. So, but some of you might not be able to identify with having passive or permissive parents. Maybe, I mean, you might have had abusive parents. They might have been physically abusive, emotionally abusive, sexually abusive. They might have been neglectful, not taking care of your basic human needs. They might have been toxic. Who knows? Your parents might even have been evil. But what I want you to understand is, no matter where your parents are on the continuum, the biblical process for healing your childhood wounds and breaking the cycle is the same. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to be more challenging for you. I have the one of the worst things I've ever heard is one of my friends. I don't even know if I should say this, but I will go ahead and say it anyway. His father was a trucker, and when his dad would come home, he would hide in the cabinets underneath the kitchen sink, because he knew that when his dad found him, he was going to sexually abuse him when he came off the road. Well, you just don't get you never really fully get by that. But I will say this: my friend, through the grace and the forgiveness and the mercy of Jesus, has been able to eventually conquer that. Now, he had a long, hard process to go through to get there, but. So you're thinking, well, you don't know my parents. They're the last people in the world that I would want to forgive. But I'm here to suggest to you that forgiveness is not about them. Forgiving them is not about them. Forgiving them heals you. Forgiving your parents heals you. And I'm going to show you how you can do that unilaterally, even if they're evil, even if they're toxic, even if they're not alive. Even if they're just terrible people, or if they're on the other end of the spectrum like mine, the process is really the same. And I'm going to show you how to do that in the book. And
Daryl
I think.
Strawberry shares a story like that, the baseball player. He says, "My dad, when he was 12, came into the household with a shotgun and said, "I'm going to shoot you all up." And
Wow.
mom got him out, saved him, and then he didn't associate with his dad ever again. Just cut him out of his life. And God told Daryl, "Go to your father. You're hours away. Go to your father. He's close to death. Ask your father for his forgiveness." And he says, "God, I ain't doing that, and you're wrong. I need to go to him and tell him he needs to forgive me." And God's like, "Daryl, you heard me correctly. Go do what I told you to do. Go ask for your father's forgiveness for the things you've done to your father." And he broke down, cried, surrendered, went, left his father, and he said, "I felt so free. I felt so forgiven, but it was the last thing in the world I ever wanted to do, no matter what. And instead, I didn't tell my father he needs, I didn't ask for him to, seek my forgiveness. Because I forgave my father, for asked my father to forgive me, even though the father clearly caused." And he's like, it was amazing. He goes, God knows what he's doing. Listen to him.
Whatever wounds you have, man, they may describe you, but they do not have to define you. There is light at the end of the tunnel on childhood wounds, that's for sure. And you're hearing several stories here even now about how that works. So my father, I really wanted to reconnect with him. So I forgave my parents at 25, but it was still Christmas, Easter, and Labor Day picnic, you know. But in my early 30s, I really started to, I just call it, have a yearning to reconnect, to reconcile, have a relationship with my dad in particular. So I invited him to go to lunch on his birthday, and we had a great time. He said yes, and we had a great time. We made that an annual tradition. When I was 35 years of age, we finished our lunch and were walking out to our vehicles, and they happened to be parked next to each other. My dad had a truck. He was a working man, and my car was next to his. And Dan, I really have no idea where this came from or how it happened, but I said, "Dad, could I give you a hug?" As we were getting ready to go to our cars. And before the words were out of my mouth, he was charging me like a grizzly bear. And he wrapped his arms around me, and he just let out this deep, primordial groan. Must have lasted for 20 seconds. And we drew back from each other, hands on each other's shoulders. Tears were streaming down our faces. And I said, "I love you, Dad." And he said, "I love you too, son." And that was the first time I ever recall hearing the words, "I love you." I was 35 years of age. It was magic. It was electric. It completely transformed not just me, not just our relationship, but our entire family. Dan, it was crazy. I never spoke of it to anybody in the family, and I'm almost certain my dad never spoke of it. But our entire family, the whole tenor, texture, tone of our family changed. So it was just a few months later, I was talking to my younger brother, one of my younger brothers on the phone. He said, we finished, and he said, "Well," I said, "Well, I love you." And he said, "Well, no, I got that backwards." He said, "I love you." And I said, "Well, I love you more than you love me." And he said, No, I love you more than you love me." And I said, "No, you don't. I've loved you more than you love me for a long time." And then I laughed and hung up the phone on him. And I was thinking, who are you? And what have you done with my brother? But it was a beautiful thing. Now, that may not happen in every situation. So in the book, I do show you how to have awkward conversations with your parents, siblings, whomever, how to have awkward conversations, and then also how to set up boundaries. So, for example, if your parents come over to your home and put your wife down and say demeaning things, belittling things to your children, I'm going to show you how to set up boundaries for that. But even in the context of that, I'm also going to show you how you don't have to be the prisoner of those behaviors.
Yeah, I love how the things that are in the book go right back to biblical principles. I've got one of the listeners. He says, "I want to ask him if he could sit down now as an adult with himself as a child. What would he say to that child sitting across from him
Yeah, it's I love you. I'm proud of you. I believe in you. This is right out of, you mentioned the baptism of Jesus, also at the Transfiguration. This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. My beloved son, I love him,
Yes.
in whom I am well pleased. I'm proud of him. I love you. I'm proud of you every day. I just encourage fathers every single day, tell each child every day, I love you. I'm proud of you. I believe in you. I'm here for you. And then if they're grown, pick up the phone right now. Don't even text them. Pick up the phone or text them and ask them if it's okay for a phone call. But tell them verbally, I love you and I'm proud of you. I actually have a daily relationship with my grown son. And every day I tell our son still that I love him. It's magic. It releases all the fruits of the spirit in the child. It releases the power of the Holy Spirit in the child. So yeah, that's my advice.
And there's even if parents were great, you may navigated things as kids and as adults, we tell ourselves stories that might not serve us. So I think this book also can help us process through those stories and realize where we came up with them. I think it was your story where, no, it was that pastor's son, the bike
Yeah,
trip,
Noah.
the baseball game. He
So the bike story is mine, and then the counselor threw out another story. So yeah, this is probably the signature story, or at least a signature story of my childhood. So when I was about 10 years of age, I had a little league baseball game. I was putting on my uniform, and my parents apparently didn't come to the games. And so they said that announced that they would like to that they were planning to come to the game. Well, I argued with them until I was in tears that I didn't want them to come to the game. And finally they relented and said, okay, well, okay, we won't come to your game then. Then I threaded the baseball glove over my handlebars and cried for the 8 minute bicycle ride all the way to Little League Field because they were not coming. I mean, so my counselor says, well, what do you think that means? I said, well, you tell me. That's why I'm here. I have no idea what it means. And then she told the story about a pastor who had a son named Noah, and he promised his son Noah that he would take him fishing the next morning. The little boy was bounding around the house so excited the night before. Next morning, they were getting ready, and the phone rang. Pastor answered the phone. He said, yes, I understand. I'll be right there. Put down the phone and rushed out of the house. That evening, when he got home, his little boy Noah, who had been bounding around the house earlier, was now moping over his dinner. Pastor's wife said, do you know that you had promised to take Noah fishing this morning? And he was mortified. He said, Noah, I can't believe I did that. I am so sorry. Please forgive me, and we'll go fishing another time. Noah said, that's okay. I don't like fishing anyway. And I said to my counselor, I think I'm starting to get the picture. And the point is that a little boy cannot handle the thought, cannot brook the idea, cannot live with the possibility that his father doesn't want to be with him. So instead, he substitutes, I don't like fishing. So she said, when you told your parents that you didn't want them at your game, what do you think was happening? I said, I think I'm getting the picture now. And so net-net of that, I made a decision, apparently at 10 years of age, that if my parents, a vow, really, if my parents, sometime before 10, if my parents don't want me, then I don't want them either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
And,
that story's rooted in childhood and parenting, and
yeah.
but at the same time, these stories that we just put into ourselves, we make them up.
Yeah.
Are they serving us or are they not serving us? So whether it's parenting or whether it's just something that comes along the way, so many people are like stuck in the wrong lane, in a rut, in a bad pattern of thinking. And I think you mentioned it also that the devil plants these thoughts,
Of
misdirects our
course. Yeah.
thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Well, here's the problem with the
when we
vow.
wonder where this stuff comes from, we don't have to wonder all that much. In large part, The
Yeah,
devil's
the
got
word.
him and his minions planting these and misdirecting us.
I think it's also important to understand that if my vow is my vow, and other men might have their vows, but we don't just apply that to our parents. That becomes part of the narrative of our life. And
Yes.
so, okay, well, if you're not going to give me what I need, then I'm done with you. And this, we ghost each other way too quickly. We don't take the time to really understand the other person. We don't, because we feel that they're a threat to our self-confidence, to our well-being. And so we just say, okay, well, done with you. And that, so, the whole idea of the book is to really help men bubble these ideas up, be able to grasp them and understand them, unravel what happened to them, and then, but of course, positively, then to go through this healing process and then break the cycle for their own families.
So funny thing just happened. As men, as husbands, we can get angry at our wives, like snap your fingers. And my wife is going up to church to serve. She knows I'm, recording a podcast. Well, she opens the door, blows me a kiss. So go back 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I could have got angry about that. What are you
Yeah.
doing interrupting me about? She's sharing her love for me. Like, and she's going to serve at church. Like, fantastic. Come on in, interrupt the whole thing. No big deal. Like,
Absolutely.
and then who am I trying to impress?
Yeah.
She's the most important person on earth for me. And she's going to, serve the church community. And, that I'm going to get angry. We had a guy called it removing the root cause of bitterness. So when you find yourself snap into anger towards someone or something, figure out what that is. And
Yeah.
Patrick talks about going into healing and discovering, like, this book is so helpful to help you navigate those things in a way that is not it's like a friend. It's like a friend guiding you through and just being with you on the journey. And you also mentioned doing like book clubs with this, so I would encourage that as well, to have other guys join you and progress through this, and that'll help you develop strong male friendships that don't just talk about the weather and sports and how your kid's doing on the field or whatever. Like,
Yeah.
this book can really help you grow bonds with other guys in your community or online guys, whatever. But I think this one is a great book club type book that's really more of a book journey and life-changing event.
Yeah, all of my books are designed so they can be done in groups. They all
Already
have.
done two of your groups, your books in groups.
Yeah. So there's a discussion leader's guide at the back. If you wanted to start a group and it maybe had not done that before, there's a leader's guide in the back. There are reflection and discussion questions at the end of each chapter. And so the idea is just for each man to read a chapter and then to come together as a group and discuss the questions. The questions do not violate the process of relationships. So in other words, I'm not asking men to air things in the group that they wouldn't be ready to talk about. And so that's important. There are also reflection questions in the chapters themselves to really help you think through and process what happened in your particular situation. So for example, those nine characteristics that I mentioned at the one of them is characteristic number four, you're not sure what healthy male behavior looks like. And then at the end of the two pages, there's a reflection exercise, and it says, how often do you feel you know what healthy male behavior is in a given situation? So this is just for you, the reader. And then there's a continuum. And earlier in the book, I encourage men to read the book with a pen or a highlighter, and if they want to. And so you could highlight one of these words on the continuum. So how often do you feel like you know what healthy male behavior is in a given situation? Never. I never know what healthy male behavior looks like. Rarely, sometimes, usually, always. And I talk about I tell a story about when I was in the Army. I rose to specialist four in the minimum amount of time. And then when my master sergeant did promote me to sergeant E5 in the minimum amount of time, I started pestering him. So he sat me down one day and he said, "Son, let me give you some advice. The more you pester me, the less motivated I am to promote you." And just very awkward start. And my situation, I'm reading now from the book, my situational awareness was virtually non-existent, didn't have good boundaries. Emotional intelligence was stunted. I floundered. No one had taken me under their wing and mentored me about what it looks like to be a man. Can you relate, guys? And so forth and so on. Some of the characteristics: you feel socially awkward and insecure. You sabotage your relationships and your career. You can be intense, coming on too strong around others. You can say things that should be left unsaid. You make people uncomfortable and you don't know why. You're fragile, but afraid to appear weak by asking for help. You find it difficult to rise above your circumstances. You want to be steady like a thermostat, not up and down like a thermometer, but you don't know how to set the thermostat, and so on and so forth. So I have little descriptions like that for each of these nine characteristics so that men can self-identify where appropriate.
I love the words that you tied to it. You guys may find these words also in the Bible, but how often do you exhibit love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, humility, which I love, integrity, gratitude, and wisdom? Like, what makes a great authentic man? I think that's a pretty good summary list. Like, if you can do those things often, that's a pretty good list.
And the thing is that those are fruit of the Holy Spirit. So this is not about performance. You in your own power and strength, ginning up the ability, to get amped up, ramped up, jacked up so that you can do these things in your own strength. That's a recipe for burnout. But what I'm doing in the book is I'm showing you how you can receive Jesus and walk in the power of his spirit and exhibit these fruit of the spirit and really be fully alive in Jesus, so that you're not walking around feeling like, okay, well, I need to do this, I need to do that. No, you need to be surrendered to the lordship of Jesus, and then out of the overflow of your growing relationship with him, watch these things begin to change right before your eyes. Doesn't mean we don't participate. Doesn't mean we don't consecrate ourselves to it. Doesn't mean we don't have personal responsibility. But we're not trying to make God happy or avoid his wrath. Rather, we're responding in gratitude and self-discipline to what God is showing us to do because of his great love with which he has loved us.
Had another listener, they asked, can you ask him what we should share with our kids as they're looking for a spouse? I'm like, that's an interesting question. I'd like to hear your answer.
So it's complex. It's a complicated question, right? But it's also there's some simple things about it. I would say that after being married for 50 years, which I have been, my wife and I are extremely compatible. We share values. We share several common interests. Now, our typically the first and second interest for a man and a woman might be different. But when you get down to items number three and four, we have some shared interests. We both enjoy we have a trailer. We go camping in that and together. So we sh share the same faith. Even though I tricked my wife into thinking I was a Christian because
Right.
I think I thought I was, but we do share a common faith in Jesus. So compatibility, I think, is very important. But here's the problem with some of these things that we might talk about is that young people are called upon to make, really, if you think about it, many of the very most important decisions that they'll ever make at an age when they're least wise, equipped to make them well. And so counsel, I think advice and counsel is one of the most important things that you can do in choosing a spouse. If you have friends and peers and adults in your life, teachers, parents, coaches, You should ask them if you what they think about the future of this relationship. So compatibility, getting outside counsel, I think is very important. And then if it's not essential, but I would encourage someone to look at the parents of the person that they are attracted to, because if their parents, if they can say of their parents, "My parents were affirming, my parents were encouraging," that is very powerful. It's not the end of the world if, like me, they would say, "My parents were passive, my parents were permissive." That's not the end of the world. But trust me, I put my wife through a lot of things that she didn't deserve to go through because of the issues that I had to work through that were unresolved from my childhood.
I think that's a pretty good list for sure. My
Yeah.
dad gave me one years ago before I got married. He says, "Don't fall in love with the girl you're going to marry. Fall in love with the woman she'll become after." And my dad's not the most deep guy in the world. And I thought,
Pretty
where
good
did he
though.
get this from?
Pretty
And
good.
I thought, this sounds like he's onto something. I said, "Dad, how do I do that?" And he gets this grin, starts chuckling, and he says, "Good luck, son." And I don't know if it took me 10, 20 years to fully grasp the comment and to
Yeah.
understand the wisdom in it. And it's like, fall in love with your wife more every day. Look for ways to love and appreciate, trust, respect, admire, cherish, and as opposed to looking to criticize, condemn, be angry with her. And it'll help her just bloom, blossom, and the reciprocal love will just grow from there. And staying rooted in faith and, growing towards Christ brings that marriage together so much. But I've appreciated my dad's advice more and more and more all the years that that's stuck with me.
Well, I always kid around and tell guys, try to fall in love with a woman who loves Home Depot.
That's good also.
Yeah.
Have you got any parting words of wisdom and maybe a challenge for the guys? We always like to throw a challenge out from week to week.
Well, the greatest lesson that I've ever learned is one that I learned in the middle of a business crisis. So this would be what be. I would leave as my parting comment. So I'm sitting around in the rubble of a collapsing business, and my fault, I made some bad decisions.
Pride was involved.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Just throwing it out there, guys.
Oh yeah. The advantage of the young is they still know everything, and so I had the advantage of still being young enough that I knew everything, So I made all these dumb decisions and put the business at risk, and it was just crumbling, crumbling, crumbling. And I'm sitting around in the rubble of all that one day, and a thought goes through my mind. And as I say, I think it's the greatest lesson that I've ever learned, so I want to mention it and then see if this doesn't make sense. So here was the idea. There is a God we want, and there is a God who is. They are not the same God. And the turning point of our lives is when we stop seeking the God we want and start seeking the God who is. Does that make sense? Just dawned on me one day, Morley, what were you thinking? Did you really think that any amount of you wanting to reinvent God in your imagination to be the God that you wanted him to be was going to have one iota of impact on his unchanging nature and character? And I realized that I've been trying to work him to get him to see things my way, and that he was really wanting to shape me. And so I realized that because I am a rebel, as most men are, that I must each day come humbly to the foot of the cross and once again make a full, complete surrender of my life to the Lordship of Jesus. That's the deal.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So, guys, I think that's a great challenge as you go through this week. At a minimum, take 5 minutes and reflect upon that. And if you can, reflect on it every morning, the whole week, and just think through that. And hopefully that stays with you throughout your day. And you can see where you're trying to conform God to what you want as opposed to surrendering to God's will. Like that Daryl Strawberry story was so powerful when I
Yeah.
heard it, where he's fought with God. Matter of fact, that's how this podcast started. I fought with God. God, you heard me say today, I declared I absolutely wasn't starting a podcast. And later that night, I'm praying, and God says, "Hey, I want to talk to you about your podcast." I said, "God, you were at that lunch. You know, I'm not doing that." He says, "Yeah, you're right. I was there. I heard that." So anyway, about your podcast, in a authoritative, loving directive, this is what we're doing. And at that point, it was up to me: surrender or do it my way. I said, "All right, God, I'll follow. What do I do next?" And
I love that.
he got me started. He got me started. It took a little bit of effort and energy and everything else, but he kept dropping the bricks in front of me to step on, so I just kept stepping. So, and that's wow, we're talking on the podcast. Thank you for coming back a second time. And this book is awesome.
Well, guys, if you want to take a look, you can learn more about it at patrickmorley.com/book, patrickmorley.com/book. And there are links there to all the retailers. I noticed that Amazon's got it on sale right now, so that's pretty cool. And I think it's 25% or maybe not full 25%. Anyway, it's a good percentage off. But yeah, take a look. And I also encourage guys to read it. If it's meaningful to you, read it twice. For the same reason that you watch a good movie that you liked a second time, you know the whole arc of the movie, and everything makes so much more sense the second time around. And this is that kind of a book. It really is. It is a it's a it's a it's a it's a book to become a like a companion for you, not just an intellectual exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%, guys. And Patrick's got a podcast that came out yesterday. So it's so good. So good. So many different, wonderful, and amazing things you do inside of your organization and for others. So thank you for blessing us with your time and your wisdom and just sharing generously and also humbly. If we had a live audience today, we might all stand up and give you a standing ovation.
Wow, that's special. That's special. I named our podcast "Burn Your Boats." There's that great story, and
Yes.
it fits with what we're talking about here. The great story: Hernando Cortez, 1519, lands on the shore of Mexico to do his thing, and he tells his men to burn their boats. Whoa, what's this? Oh, I see it is. I got an alarm going off for another meeting. So anyway, they land. He tells his men to burn their boats so that there's no possibility of turning back. That's what full surrender is. So,
100%, 100%. We're not doing that. Well, we don't need them anymore. We're not going back. We're all in. So, yeah, that was a turning point in that battle. So, thank you very much,
Much
Patrick, and
brother.
thank you guys. Love you too, Patrick. It's great to be able to surrender and tell guys we love them and appreciate you doing that. Appreciate the prayer before and look forward to staying in touch and maybe down the road, we even do a little 1 week or 2 week or 3 week or something book club type thing on this book. I'd love to invite guys into that.
Do that and then have me come on. I'd love to meet with them in a
Yeah.
Zoom. Doesn't have to be a broadcast to just be a
Yeah.
Zoom with them. So yeah.
That'd be awesome. I
Love
will.
that.
You
Okay,
bet.
brother.
You bet. Love you,
Bye
brother.
for now.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Journey of a Christian Dad podcast. Thank you guys for being a light. Shine that light out and let others see it. With you guys part of this community, it helps me be accountable to you guys. It helps me be accountable to myself, be accountable to God and Jesus. I hope you appreciated this episode and picked up some great things. Hope you like the challenge and hope you can execute on that challenge this week. I ask of you, please subscribe, share the show with others. Join us inside of the Journey of a Christian Dad on Facebook, inside our private community. Share that community with others. Have your buddies join. Have other dads that are looking to grow in their faith, grow as spiritual leaders of their family. As we engage in our journey and be intentional with it, we can help others grow theirs as well. We thank you again for listening. We thank you for all your reviews. Look forward to reading a review of yours on a future show. So, dear God, thanks for blessing all of us, and thanks for drawing us closer to you. In your name we pray. Amen. Have fun, guys.